Welcome back to another episode. Before we begin, I just want to state our usual message from our sponsor, Eva's Bell Bonds, where their licensed professionals are available 24/7, 7 days a week. They work hard to make your experience as fast and convenient as possible. Their goal is to help reunite families across the state of Idaho safely and effectively. Payments are available. Se habla español. Give them a call and let them help you at 208-312-3660. Again, that is 208-312-3660. And if you are local to the Twin Falls area, remember that they have a new office up and running on Blue Lakes Boulevard. So guys, welcome back. Today we are going to be discussing the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And this was in fact a request, so if you guys know or have any topics that you want me to sit and research and record for you and put out, let me know. Send me a Gmail, hit up the Instagram through a DM, or even comment on one of our posts, and you know what? I got you. So before I begin, I definitely want you guys to know that I am not one-sided on the whole story, but I know it's a super touchy subject, and a lot of people still aren't prepared to talk about this for some reason, but I will kind of give you kind of just a quick gloss over of his life before, and then I will put out multiple conspiracies, and then I will give you my opinion, so then that way you guys know that it's like unbiased. Or I'll try to be unbiased. But with that in mind, let's start from the beginning. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was born on May 29th, 1917. And that makes him a Gemini. And that didn't make any sense until I researched this case. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. He's definitely a Gemini. Ew. But anyway, his place of birth was Brookline, Massachusetts. He was born to parents Joseph P. Kennedy Sr. and Rose Kennedy. Despite being ill constantly as a child and picked on by his older brothers, he had a pretty normal childhood. He graduated at number 65 in his class at Choate Boarding School and then entered Harvard in 1936. Although he was not the best athlete, he still played a lot of football. But unfortunately, this ended in John rupturing a disc in his spine. He never truly recovered from this accident, and it was because of this that he struggled with back problems for the remainder of his life. In June 1940, he graduated from Harvard, and soon after he graduated, John and his older brother had enlisted in the Navy. Throughout his time there, he had experienced a shitload, and I cannot state that enough. Like, the boy had a lot of bad luck. He went through a lot of bad situations. For example, he was crashed into by another plane. Because he was crashed into the other plane, it like threw his body back and he hit a wall really hard, which of course weakened his back already more than it already was, I should say. He then had to carry multiple soldiers to safety, again, weakening his back. And I read an article in which he had to swim with the, life jacket string of another comrade in his mouth and had to, like, swim them to safety. And honestly, that's pretty badass. But, I'm sorry my voice keeps giving out. It's really fucking hot in here and I can't record with the fan on and I can't have the windows open because there's too much background noise. And you see all the sacrifices that I go through for you guys for this baby podcast. Anyway, so when he returned home, I guess it's safe to say that his back was pretty fucked up. But he was awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal for his leadership and courage. However, his brother did not make it back alive. And it was because of this incident that John gave up being a writer or a teacher and decided to run for Congress in Massachusetts. He won in 1946. JFK did 3 terms in the House of Representatives as a Democrat, and then in 1952, he was elected to the U.S. Senate. At 36, John had married Jacqueline, but soon after they were married, he had to have 2 surgeries done to try and heal his back, but unfortunately, they couldn't heal it all the way. But while he recovered from the surgeries, he wrote a book based on U.S. senators who risked their careers for the things that they believed in. And I just want to take a quick second so that we can do a little side sticky note right now. The fact that this man wrote a book while he was recovering from back surgery after coming back from the war and saving people and shit, and he decided to dedicate his time to writing a book about other people being like heroes or whatever. And I don't know why, but that just speaks a lot of volumes to me, just who he is as a person and how much potential he had and just how much the people who like inspired him, he made sure that it resonated in him. I don't know, maybe it's not that deep, fam, but I think he would have been a bomb-ass president. I think he was what this country needed, and it's really shitty that the good ones die, and the bad ones are just out here being bad, but in 1957, his first child, Caroline, was born. On July 13th, 1960, the Democratic Party nominated him as a candidate for president because of all the assets he had, because they saw how much work he put in, and he was just a good, well-rounded guy. So on November 8th, 1960, at the age of 43, Kennedy was the youngest man elected president. But this wasn't his only first. He was also Catholic. So this kind of had everybody shook because nobody thought that we could have a Catholic president, but we out here, sis. His speech when he was sworn in, I want to make this as bolded, underlined, and italicized. Put that text on number 32. Because when he was sworn in, he asked the nations of the world to join together to fight for what he called, quote, common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. And maybe I'm biased, but if I was living in that time, I could see how much hope he could give the people. You know, they just got through a war, and then you just have this fresh, new president who's actually for the people. I can see why everybody was really hurt when he was assassinated, because you give these people a beacon of hope, and then you take it down, and then what do they have left, you know? I don't know. I just thought that fucking the way he swore, he was sworn in, was, you could just see how he was as a person. So one of the very first things that President Kennedy did was create the Peace Corps. And through this program that is still around today, may I add, Americans can volunteer to work anywhere in the world where assistance is needed. They can help in areas like education, farming, healthcare, and construction. And I just think that this is such an amazing organization. Like, if I had time and I didn't have bills, I would want to do at least a year just so I can, like, go and help people, you know? I just think that, you know, other presidents are like, they see the big red button and they're like, let's go to war. But this man literally made the Peace Corps, like, and they shot him, like, for what? But moving on, I'm getting too opinionated, and I'm just supposed to be giving you his life. So President Kennedy was also eager for the United States to, Let me try that again. President Kennedy was also eager for the United States to lead the way exploring space. And because of the Soviet Union being so ahead of the United States in its space program, that Kennedy decided he was super determined to catch up to them. He said, quote, "No nation which expects to be the leader of other nations can expect to stay behind in this race for space." And because he was so eager to push everybody up on space, Kennedy approved more than $22 billion for the Apollo project. I said that really weird, didn't I? Apollo project. Oh my god, I even read it backwards. For Project Apollo. Oh my god, look at me. Which, the goal of that project was landing an American man on the moon before the end of the decade. And that's pretty advanced thinking for 1963, if you ask me. June 11, 1963, President Kennedy decided that the time had come to take stronger action to help civil rights struggle. He proposed a new civil rights bill to Congress, and the man even went on national TV asking Americans to end racism. Quote, 100 years of delay have passed since President Lincoln freed the slaves, yet their heirs, their grandsons, are not fully free. Let that resonate in your head. Oh my god. I cannot believe we're still having this conversation in 2020. He also said, quote, "This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds on the principle that all men are created equal." President Kennedy made it clear that all Americans, regardless of their skin color, should enjoy a good and happy life in the U.S. Let me cut my hands around the mic so that you guys can just stop being racist, man. Like, why is that so hard? And literally, this man's over here passing bills to end racism, and then we have Orange Man on TV right now telling, quote, Proud Boys to stand by. What the fuck? Like, what the fuck? I hate this life. Anyway, on November 21st, 1963, President Kennedy flew to Texas to give several political speeches. And unfortunately, the next day, as he drove slowly past cheering crowds in Dallas, they took a right turn on Elm Street, and then the first bullet was shot, but it missed the president. So my question is, whenever I'm in public, if I ever go to like parades, if I ever even go to like Walmart and I hear a suspicious noise, I'm turning around, breaking my neck at all angles. But you're telling me that a bullet shot into a crowd, shot a man, and nobody reacted? I don't understand how that makes any sense. If I hear a firework, I'm screaming already. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. If you hear a gunshot, you're telling me that you're not going to react? I don't know. But the next bullet is shot, and you can see that this one hits JFK in the neck. If you watch the videos, you can see him, he's kind of like hunched over. And his wife is like grabbing him, looking real concerned. But because of the brace that he wore for his back, he didn't go down completely. So I imagine, like, if you're shot with a bullet, you're not wearing a brace, you're obviously gonna slump over and croak. You know, maybe not croak, but you're gonna like slump over in the seat. But because he was wearing this brace that kept him upright, he didn't go all the way down. And because of this, the third shot hit JFK in the back right side of his head, and this caused a portion to blow out. And there's a time where you can see Jackie trying to crawl out of the back of the car. And for some reason, that's something that always like sticks with me, is just that image of her trying to get out of the car. And I don't know why, but like anytime somebody talks about JFK, that's the first thing that comes to my head. Like, I just cannot imagine being her in that situation, you know? It's all just real fucked up. At 12:35, they arrived to the hospital, and about 20 minutes later, he is pronounced dead. So throughout this time, Jackie is trying to have a priest come in and perform the Catholic tradition for his last prayers, because apparently this is, if you have a priest come in when you're about to die or when you're dead, you have them pray over you, then apparently it's an easier ascension into heaven. And I guess, I don't know, I was raised Catholic and I believe some things very strongly in the Catholic faith, but other things I don't, so just call me half Catholic. Makes no sense. Anyway, the medical team at Parkland Memorial Hospital wanted to do the autopsy, but the government refused to let them, and they took Kennedy's body. Again, let me tell you that they took the body, even though the people at the hospital fought to do the autopsy there, because it is illegal, in case you didn't know. But at the time, killing the president was not a federal offense. So the hospital was just fighting to do the autopsy. They wanted it to be performed in Dallas before he left, but they still took his body on Air Force One, I think. Air Force Two, Air Force One. And everything was just super sketchy because the government was able to say this is how he died. And we just had to believe it. So we don't really know the truth about that. All right, now that you guys have his basic life, let's talk deeper about this situation. For me, this isn't my opinion yet. Not yet, not till the end. But I just want you guys to keep this last sentence in, just keep it in the back of your head for when we come back to this. The fact that JFK had an entire speech dedicated to taking down secret societies, he wanted a transparency in the government, and he stated, quote, he wanted a free and open society. So, with that in mind, let's talk about what we know so far from the documents that were leaked a few years ago. Or they weren't leaked, but they were released, but there's still a lot of recanted stuff and a lot of things that people don't want us to know. And apparently, his family didn't want any of the documents to be released till like 2173 or something like that. But I guess they're giving us what they think is fair. But we learned that the FBI warned Dallas police of threat to kill Oswald. This was in the document, quote, we at once notified the chief of police and had assured us, and he assured us that Oswald would be given sufficient protection. This morning we called the chief of police again, warning of the possibility of some effort against Oswald, and again he assured us adequate protection would be given. However, this was not done, end quote. So, if the FBI had warned the Dallas police about this man being on the loose, why the hell would they let JFK get in that car without the fucking top on? Nobody rides around without protection nowadays, and they probably didn't back in the day either. So why did they let this man, with warning ahead, still do that? It just doesn't make sense to me. The USSR was worried about irresponsible US launching a missile. The Soviet Union were scared because they believed the conspiracy behind Kennedy's death was organized by a right-wing coup or JFK's successor, Lyndon Johnson. So the fact that the Soviet Union is scared that it's an inside job is scary. But, like, what the fuck? Like, if another country is thinking that, is believing that it was an inside job, then there's a problem with us, not them. That's probably gonna give me a lot of heat, but whatever. We also learned that Cuba reacted with, quote, happy delight when they found out about the murder. But this was in a CIA memo, so I don't necessarily believe it, considering Operation Blame It on Cuba. And, you know, our government just lies. So I don't know if I can necessarily believe them. The next thing we learned was that Oswald spoke to a member of a KGB assassination unit. We also learned that officers were looking for Oswald before the assassination. Apparently, they got a lot of inquiries to locate Lee Harvey Oswald. Jack Ruby, the man who killed Oswald, was apparently in cahoots with the Dallas police, and that was something that we learned from the documents as well. We also learned that the FBI was concerned about conspiracy theories from the start. Hoover had already started to fear conspiracy theorizing, quote, "The thing I am concerned about," Hoover said, "is having something issued so that we can convince the public that Oswald is the real assassin." And that's exactly what a liar would say. Just kidding. I'm totally kidding. But we also learned that a British local newspaper was warned in advance. Apparently, the caller said only that the Cambridge News reporter should call the American embassy in London for some big news and then hung up. After the word of the president's death was received, the reporter informed the Cambridge police of the anonymous call, and the police informed the MI5. Ugh, that's so frustrating. And, of course, we don't have all the documents. Trump blocked the release of an unknown number of documents, saying that he had, quote, no choice but to bow to the national security concerns of the FBI and CIA. And he also ordered them to review their still secret documents over the next 180 days, setting a new deadline for the 26th of April, 2018. So, I think that it's always going to be something that we know nothing about. And I think it's something that people are going to always want to keep secret, because I believe that it was quite the inside job. But I'm going to hit you with the top theories that was behind JFK's assassination. Number one is the CIA theory. People who believe the CIA was behind Kennedy's assassination speculate that the agency was strongly opposed of a number of the president's stances on Cuba and communism. So the theory is that Kennedy's refusal to offer air support for the failed Bay of Pigs invasion, a CIA-sponsored mission to overthrow Fidel Castro, triggered the CIA into eliminating Kennedy. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt it. Because this makes people believe that the CIA set up Oswald as its scapegoat. And because he was such an easy target, then, you know, I don't exactly not agree with it. But it's definitely a possibility. It's probably not my favorite theory, but like maybe a 5 out of 10. But at the time that all this stuff was going down, like, the man was like getting a Coke, you know, so... So, I don't know. The next theory is the Mafia theory. So, this theory suggests that the CIA worked with the Mafia to have Kennedy killed, that two organizations had shared interest in overthrowing Castro. Apparently, a lot of people wanted that man dead. And that the Mafia held a number of investments in Cuban casinos. So, because of this, government documents show the CIA did work with the Mafia to take down Castro. So, of course, conspiracy theorists claim that the two worked together to assassinate Kennedy. And this isn't something that, I don't know, maybe like a 4 out of 10. I think I believe that the CIA did it more than I believe that the Mafia did it. But there's also the Cuban exile theory. Some believe that the effort was far less sophisticated than a federal conspiracy, but carried out by a group of rogue Cuban exiles who saw the failed Bay of Pigs invasion as sufficient evidence that Kennedy was an unfit president. And because of this, between 1959, when the Cuban Revolution brought Castro to power, Kennedy's assassination in 1963, his popularity among exiles had shot up. So, in October of 1963, anti-Castro Cubans met up with the right-wing Americans and apparently discussed frustrations with Kennedy. So, theorists speculate that meeting him had made them want to kill him because maybe he just didn't say the right things. The Lyndon B. Johnson theory. One theory speculates that Lyndon B. Johnson feared getting dropped from the Democratic ticket in the 1964 election, so he plotted to have Kennedy assassinated. According to a 1968 memoir written by Kennedy's personal secretary, it is true that Kennedy planned to replace Johnson as vice president. Kennedy told Lincoln as much on November 19, 1963, 3 days before he was killed. And because of this, conspiracy theories point the timeline as evidence that Johnson might have had a hand in his murder. And I don't know. If you threaten a man's power, then a man's probably gonna go crazy because y'all are crazy. But maybe I give that one a 7 out of 10. A lot closer than than the other ones. There's also the KBG theory. Some theorists believe that a band of Soviet officers had decided to kill Kennedy. Toward the end of the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, did you hear Jacob sneeze in the background? Apparently, they were forced to remove the intercontinental ballistic missiles he deployed to Cuba due to U.S. material. I can't even say any of these words. Due to U.S. threats against the Soviet Union. There you go, sis. Because I couldn't say that word. but those are the top theories. And I don't know what I think. But if I'm going to choose two, then it's definitely going to be the CIA. And it's going to be the Lyndon B. Johnson. Because honestly, both deal with people in power that can't handle not being in power. So, fight me. I also found this real snazzy thing on 50 things you didn't know about the assassination of Kennedy. And the fact that there's a lot of shit that I didn't know that went down here. But if you're interested in that, go look it up. Real snazzy. You're gonna find out a lot of things that you didn't know. Like Lyndon B. Johnson becoming president 99 minutes after Kennedy's death. Like, I know it's supposed to be that fast, but like, it doesn't have to be that fast, you know? There's a lot of things that I don't understand happen. Like, why did Jackie remove her wedding ring and put it on her husband's finger to be buried with him and then later retrieved it? It doesn't make sense. As well as Jackie's suit that she was wearing has never been cleaned and still lies in National Archives, and it can't be shown to the public until at least 2103. So, what are they going to do, put in a museum? Like, oh my god, it makes no sense. The Texas School Book Depository on the 6th floor where, apparently, Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy is actually now a museum dedicated to his assassination. So the fact that the place where the man stood who shot you, supposedly, is now where we remember your death. I'd be pissed as a ghost and I would fuck that shit up every night, just so you know. But, you guys, this is a hard one because I never know what to think, and I never know how I feel about the whole situation, because it's just really, really fucked up. Like, he seemed like he was gonna be a really good president, you know? And it's just shitty. His last words were, it said, quote, "President, you can't say Dallas doesn't love you." And Kennedy replied, "No, you certainly can't." And then he died in Dallas. And that's fucked. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And it makes me sad because I really believe that he would have been good for this country. But, you know, some things ain't it, sis. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if I missed anything, feel free to correct me, because there's so many things about this whole conspiracy situation, life event, that I still don't understand. And there's a lot of things that we will never understand until we get those documented things that aren't recanted. I'm pretty sure JFK believed in aliens. And and I know that sounds dumb, but, like, look it up, sis, and you're gonna know. But I think that's everything. Remember that we're on all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, at Passions Are Peace Podcast. If you have a request, hit me up. Let me know what you want to hear me babble on about for 20 to 30 minutes, and I'm your girl. Or, like, I've been watching the fucking 100 on Netflix. It's awful, by the way. But that guy always says, "And Bob's your uncle." That's awful, but there you go, "And Bob's your uncle." If you guys enjoy this podcast, remember to give us a rate on Apple Podcasts, because that's really the only thing that can get us traction, which unfortunately is kind of dumb, because why is it only one platform? I just want to say thank you to, like, those 5 people who put me on their Amazon speaker. Like, the fact that you have my voice going on in your house while you're doing your daily tasks makes me want to cry, because I'm like, damn, bitch, you're annoying, and these people have you up in their homes. Like, I'm sorry I'm trash, but hi to my listeners in France. I think that's so cool. And if I can remember the people from the other side of the country, or the other side of the world, then I would shout you guys out too. But for some reason, France resonates with me. Oh my god, I'm totally getting off topic. But remember, you guys, to stay hydrated and drink your water and work hard and go look more into this thing, because we need to be more woke, homies. But yeah, I love you guys. Don't forget to vote. Don't forget to register to vote. And just don't be a prick. I love you guys, and I will see you in the next one. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I hope you stay peaceful and you stay passionate, and you know that we love you over here, and you always have a safe space over here. Love you. Bye.